Welcome, welcome, coaches, teachers, parents, and medical professionals. You are listening to Larissa Mills and my podcast, At the Table. I am the founder of iParentGen.com. And today and every day, we are going to discuss how families and schools are managing technology and raising children and teaching them. We are also going to listen to how technology is impacting athletes and their level of sport. So let's get to it. Stay tuned and please call in with your questions or join us on Facebook or follow us on Instagram. But parents, you are not alone. There are courses, articles, and videos on my website. Please sign up for free. So let's get listening.
Hello there, Rob. Look at you all sporty.
This is my go-to. Tiger's got his Sunday red, so this is kind of my color scheme, and I got my hat backwards, so I'm just trying to always stay consistent.
I love it. I almost was like, I ran the dog, and I'm like, oh, no, maybe I should change. it's like 30 degrees already.
Yeah. I know. I left the gym this morning. I had a sweatshirt on when I went at around 5:36, and I walked out without it on. I'm glad it got warm here.
Oh, and you know what? I love fall because it starts off cool and then it's kind of warm and then it's kind of cool at night. Like I just love fall. And with fall comes hockey and hockey tryouts. And I want everybody, all of our listeners, to hear from Rob Palante today. He is a mental performance coach and he is on the Parent Talk today. And everybody knows who is part of our listening group that I'm a big advocate of making sure we support our athletes because their mental health matters. And not just their mental health, it's their resiliency skills that actually take them up to the next level. So if you want to know who Rob is, well, he's got a really extensive resume here. I might lose my breath getting through it all, but I want to give you a background because it is going to help with our discussion today. Because this discussion is for coaches, parents, and athletes, as you know. And a lot of people always comment on the information that we're putting out, which is so great because, Rob, we're making change. I bunch of the different names we're working with. Yes. I see small changes happening. So, Rob, you're here today to talk about how the pandemic has affected our athletes, their mindsets, and how we're going to re-engage them and how we can best support them today, right? And your background is extensive. I mean, you were an NCAA player, pro hockey player. You did corporate leadership and development for a very long time. You created your mental performance program, you said, after you were in an accident. And yes. That's really interesting. And I'd like you to, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Sure.
And your passion and vision is to be a servant leader, providing support for athletes and coaches looking to improve and develop mental fitness as well as their athletic skills. And today you are in Waterdown, and it's funny, you coach the little guys too, the AAA little guys, right?
Yeah, I do, in the Mississauga Senators. Give them a little shout out.
Yeah, that's amazing. I don't know how you do. And your dad.
And I'm a dad. I've got a 17-year-old son and a very soon to be 15-year-old daughter.
Nice. Now, do they play sports too, Rob?
So my son was involved in hockey for a while. He was always sort of that double A player. And I think he's at a point now where, you know, he just plays for fun. He didn't really pursue it actively.
Isn't that the
and
best?
That's a whole other discussion, but he plays for fun.
The healthiest.
I think so too.
You know, in the end for their, they, I love it when they start scoring on each other and they do these little, and they're like just playing, not for the score.
Just
playing for fun. Actually, I see better playing.
You know, it brings me back to the days where, like, you know, when I grew up and, you know, I know we're going to get into a bunch of things, but just quickly, you know, during the pandemic and everybody was talking about, you know, the kids, you know, being away from the rink and socializing. One of the things that I did notice, especially in my community, was this resurgence in outdoor rinks and kids just looking for an opportunity just to get outside and play. And I just, you know, and I go out for my walks every day and, you know, wherever there was a little patch of ice around, you know, or these frozen water feeding areas, the reservoirs, The kids would, they would scrape them off and bring out some nets. And I just loved seeing that. I love that. And I hadn't seen it for years.
So good.
Yeah, it was just, and old I think school. That's really old school. That's what,
no
that's
screens,
what I did.
No phones, no gaming.
No parents. Just throw just a puck play. Down and go have fun. And there were so many skills that you would pick up. Absolutely.
Definitely missing. Yeah. I really, really like that. I'm envisioning toques, nets, yep. Hot chocolate thermoses with these old school Wayne Gretzky hats on their heads. That's what
yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, that's how we did. We'd take old hockey socks and put them on our head, you know? And
Right. Yeah. My brothers did. Yeah. I went as a hockey player for Halloween. And my brothers put that thing on my head. I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I know you're very busy because I know it's tryout season and I know you're very involved with your business and with your kids and with hockey. And thank you for coaching teams because not everybody wants to coach. And I know there's a lot of challenges that come with coaching now. I know as a coach myself, we do rowing or volleyball. And, it's a very different environment now where we were respected, you know, two decades ago. And now I see such a helicopter type of tight noose around everything their children do. And it's very important. I think one of the things we're going to discuss today is how we can sort of help parents just relax and let us take your kids into our experiences and knowledge and go with them. How do you feel about coaching today? Do you think it's different?
Yeah. First of all, Larissa, thank you for having me on your show. And I'm happy to be here and share my experiences. If somebody gets something out of listening to me babble on, I think that's fantastic. My experiences with coaching coaches got to stop making it about them and make it about the kids. Yeah. Right. It should be a process of development where not only are we working on skills and drills and all of the functionality of the sport, but we should be developing them as young people and bringing in skills that they can use for life. And not just, you know, this intimidation factor of a coach and do what the coach says, because that's so old. That was, you know, back when I played. And I'm hoping, based on some of the conversations I've even had with some of my peers that are now, you know, have transitioned from players into management and into coaching,
right.
It's a new philosophy. It's a new philosophy. And I see it at some of the I'll call it the premier levels, at the NHL, the junior and the college levels. I think we're still missing it at the minor hockey level.
I agree.
You know, and I'm not, that's the only sport I'm involved in coaching. So you could probably add some value to the sports that you coach, but I think that's something that coaches at a foundational level, at a grassroots level, really need to start adapting and make it about why they're there for the kids, and the personal development should be just as important as the skill development.
And you know what the psychological bonus of that is, Rob? Like, we know that in psychology, yes, I might do a side note here and use the my psych, but
for sure.
8 or 9 years old, if kids don't get the bond of security attachment with a parent or feel secure with a teacher or a coach, their relationships ongoing into adulthood are going to be very difficult to manage and work with because they don't have that security. So therefore they express unwanted behavior. So here's right. The magic thing. If schools, if coaches, and if parents started to work on self-talk, started to work on resilience habits, mantras, we started to work with emotional intelligence, which many countries in Europe and hockey schools, I just found that out for you, are adapting emotional intelligence work outside, but practicing it on the ice as well, because they're going to work. Here's the bonus is that if their minds and emotional intelligence is working better at a younger age, do you know the magic that is going to happen with the physical and teamwork aspect? It's crazy. Like, it's going to be even better.
Yeah. Well, Larissa, look, I mean, you and I know this, and we could sit and chat about this all day long. That age group, you know, up until 8 or 9 years. My tea is
getting cold. We'll be here all day. I need to go make more tea.
That 8 or 9, up until 8 or 9, we know those are the imprint years, right? So the kids haven't established a base, exactly, of a foundation where they have their own thoughts yet. So it's just, you know, they're just absorbing. So we want to make sure that the message that they're getting is one about building up their own confidence, their own self-esteem, yeah, making sure that emotional and physiological states are in support of each other, and they're not leaving their sports arena or their education facility and questioning why am I being yelled at and not, or why am I being disciplined, without having that opportunity to ask the instructor, the teacher, the coach, why do you want me to do this? Right. Because we know that emotion
as a teacher, former teacher, I always tell the kids at the beginning of the class, this is why you're learning the content today about meiosis, because you need to learn the basics of cellular development and how we grow cells. Right.
Yes.
So I said, what if we didn't understand that, how can we understand how production works? Like, so go through the why, and then they're like, okay, boom, okay, the why is gone, they're good, they embrace it. But every day teachers put out their objective, just like most coaches. Today we're going to learn this, and I want to hear, because this is a fundamental to, you know, this aspect, right? And I do.
It's such an important element for the kids to understand. These kids are smart, you know, and we're going to get into that whole discussion about the amount of information they have at their fingertips, but they understand what's going on to a certain level. And if you can share with them and talk, you know, at their level and share with them why you want them to do that, you're going to get more buy-in.
Right.
You know, you're going to allow them to process in their mind, okay, now I know why I need to do this. It makes sense, and can understand why maybe if I didn't do it, the coach might get upset at me. So now in their own mind, they now have a tool to be able to go back and use that to rechange or rethink about their actions the next time, which is that refocus part is what is going to allow them to progressively get better, which is what we want ultimately.
Right. Now, with that being said, because now this is a good time, I want to ask this question. When you were young, okay, when you were coming up through hockey or any sport, any other sport you played, was there one person or a couple of people that you gravitated towards because you felt they were coaching you, as in Rob, not just coaching your skills, so a mentor of sorts?
Yeah, I'll tell you, and I'm very, very fortunate to be able to say this, my dad was probably my biggest mentor. Yeah,
that's my dad, you know, too.
Yeah, he was, the only time my father ever really got upset was when there was no effort or a lack of effort. He didn't get mad at mistakes. He didn't care, about scores. He didn't care about me scoring goals or getting points, thank God, because I think, you know, including games and practices, I might have scored 5 goals in my career. Yeah, I was a defenseman. And I wasn't the most offensive defenseman.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, having that support and having somebody, and I was also very fortunate, he played the game. So he had knowledge about the game. He had skill, and he played at a very high level. You know, he was part of the St. Mike's school. He played up with a lot of former NHL players, and he was owned by the Leafs at 14, 15 years. That's a whole other time. So he had that experience, and he never overstepped his boundaries on what the coach was telling me to do.
But he always, very
respectful of the coaches. He would ask me about what the coaches were doing. I think he only came on the ice and coached me 1 year, but other than that, he let the coaches do their thing, and he would support what they were doing with his own explanations why. And to me, that was a big reason why I was able to progress very quickly as a young player. I didn't really run into any adversity until I got out of minor hockey and a year of junior and into the NCAA.
Right. Which is exciting. What schools were you at in NCAA?
Well, I was recruited by a number of them, Michigan State, Michigan Tech, Vermont, Clarkson.
Vermont
there was a handful.
Good, though. I like
Vermont. Miami of Ohio. Yeah. Like, I chose to go to Michigan Tech, you know, hindsight always being 2020. I chose to go to Michigan Tech because after my first year of junior, they were the ones that came to me and offered me a full ride. Okay. The other school said, you need another year of development, right? Okay. Looking back, I probably could have used that extra year of development, right? And this is why I now take
wonderful, Rob.
Hindsight is fantastic, isn't it? It's always 2020. This is why I build the program that I'm doing now, is to be able to give kids, you know, some guidance through these situations. Well, my dad said he was a Michigan Tech alumni. I looked at it and said, I get to go to the school my dad went to. And, you know, he held a record at that time for most points by a freshman defenseman. Even though back then you couldn't play as a freshman, you had to sit out your first year.
Oh, you did.
He played football. Played football his first year, so he was a multi-sport athlete.
Oh my
He was
goodness.
The Mr. Athlete. Oh yeah,
that
and
sounds
he
like
ran track.
Mastered emotional intelligence.
He has, and it's certainly somebody I look up to even to this day. Nice. You know,
I'm glad he's still here.
Yeah, he's still him and my mom still kicking, still together, awesome. Still kicking. It's they have an amazing relationship, and I'm very, very lucky that I was able to grow up in a home with that kind of support and love.
Yeah.
You know,
and it was my father too. So it was basically me and three kids, right? My brothers. I'm the oldest, so I was the tomboy. And I would try hockey, and I even played football.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Quarterback, tight end, sometimes wide receiver. I had violent tendencies. Yes.
You would have to
I got to this age where I'm like, I don't think I can play with boys. I was like 13. And I'm like, maybe I should play with girls. Maybe I should try out for volleyball. I was volleyball. And I'm like, maybe I should do, because we didn't have competitive sports programs So I'm 73. So when we were in 89, we were just starting to start here. One of the first programs, which is started by an Olympic athlete and one of my mentors, Von Peckham, who started Forest City Volleyball, and his wife coached me as well in track. They were just these amazing. And you know what their qualities were? They talk to me.
Yeah.
They talk to me about me. How's your day? How are your classes? We are going to work on your strides today because this is not working with your timing. Here's why. Very clear goals, very achievable practices. And if I didn't win, but I improved. So to me, it's not about perfection.
Right.
It was never about perfection. Perfection, if you ask the Olympians we've had on here, they try, but it's almost impossible, right? So she would be like, but you shaved time, but your technique was better. We are looking for all of these, and these athletes and mentors that I loved, and my dad was like, but you improved.
Right.
You know, like my dad, you're right. Same as your dad. Never talked to me, disrespected one coach ever. And always said, you know, if you want feedback, you need to go to your coach first.
Yeah. And I think that's a big lesson for young people to learn, right? As they mature and they're looking at, you know, they value themselves based on an achieved goal, and they forget about the importance of the process. And I call it the finish line syndrome in my program, right? Yeah. They get so focused on, you know, I got to be the best and I got to be perfect. And once I do that, I'll be okay. Well, there's always going to be another finish line. If you don't fall in love with the process and those small wins and celebrate those small wins along the way, then you're only going to lead yourself to down a road of disappointment. Because once you get to that finish line, you may have think, oh, I've achieved something, happiness, greatness, perfect. No, there's another one and another one, another. The only final finish line is when they put nails in the coffin. That's it. Other than that, we should always be learning. We should always be striving to get a little better.
Yeah. There's a few things my dad said to me when we were young. Like I was younger and I was, so like you, I was NCAA. I went and I tried out, and I have to tell you, it was the most amazing athletic experience of my life, but the most humbling at the same time.
Yes.
Right. So I would go there, go to their tryouts. These girls were another literally foot taller than me, and they could jump another foot than me. And I was like, they came up to me. They're like, so where are you from? And I'm like, London. And they're like, are you going to be our back row specialist? Yeah, I obviously can't block you. I try, but I was literally visibly too short. They were dominant. It was amazing. Yeah. And so they continued to call me Snowball because majority of them are black, and they would rub my head and say, good day. And they were really great. And I loved it. And I love a coach, hard ass, but talk to us. Yeah. And I realized I would make the team, and I was not going to play the whole year. And I was doing my master's. So the coach sat down, he said, what do you think is best for you? And I really liked the way they sat down because I'm putting you in a spot where someone else may want it. So mm-hmm. what do you want? I said, well, I really love the girls. I really love the program, but if I'm not going to play, I have a lot of traveling because I'll be teaching in Canada and in the States. And he says, okay, I'll give you 24 hours to think about it because I would like you because you're a good team presence. And we were fun, and we were just hanging out, and it didn't feel like work. Right. And that was he's like, you bring a certain go to sunshine, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, that was really nice. And I said, but can I come to all your games? And I sort of decided no, because it wasn't going to shave that much off for a scholarship for the master. Yeah. But it was a great experience that I always tell people that it was humbling. I met new people. You had to work hard. You had to make friends faster. So sports, this is where we're talking about the pandemic. They have missed a year of making friends, of talking to people, being in new situations, and a whole year of development. How do you feel about that? And where can we go from here? Because I can see it in practices and tryouts. They can barely listen.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think it's a topic that people are discussing and debating all over the place right now. You know, first, let's say, you know, let's say we're happy that sports is back, right? And let's start with that. And now we have to look back at, you know, what are the regulations and the rules about getting together? Because we've got, you know, this pandemic thing that still hasn't gone away. How are we going to deal with it? Yep. How do we return to the rink, to the court, to the field? How do we do it safely?
Yep.
And how do we do that? And then kind of do it automatically, put it in the back of our mind so that we can continue on. I think that there's, you know, the isolation, and I just made a few notes thinking about this.
Yes.
So there's the physical distance challenges, obviously, of you know, coming together as a team again,
right.
Where you're used to being side by side, laughing and joking, and now we just have to be.
Grabbing
and now we got to be aware. I know, even like when we call the kids on the ice, the U11s for take a knee and explain drills, we got to make sure that, you know, they're stick length apart from each other. So we just consciously have to continue to remind them. But even as you get older, it's now you've been home, you might've developed some antisocial skills because you haven't been able to get together. You're spending more time on the phone. You're spending more time gaming. You become, you know, a little bit more introverted. You know, how do you talk to people? What can you talk about? What is open to talk? There's all of these things that I'm sure are racing through young people's minds. They're racing through my mind. You know, am I going to have to talk about COVID? Am I going to have to talk about the vaccine? I don't really want to. I know they're there. Can we talk about sports, something else? You know, how can we move this forward? So once we I think we have to figure out, you know, how to create a new baseline for the athletes to communicate. We have to make sure that when they come to the rink, they're focusing on what they need to do at the rink or whatever sport it is, you know, on the field and the court. And that preparation now has to start with changing this routine.
Yeah. It's a
because
mindset.
We know in sports, routine is so important. Our habits and our routines are going to define the success that we have. And that has all been thrown out the window over the last 18 months. And now we've developed new habits, new routines. There are new habit loops now that we have to go back, identify, and break.
Yeah, well said. I think that we're dealing with and that's sort of the other question that we were talking about the other day, where we're looking at, like, I'm looking at these elite athletes, right? These are elite volleyball players, or these are elite multiple sport players that we're examining and working with, because we work with different associations on their leadership and on their self-evaluative leadership and on their emotional intelligence. But I tell you, their phones are making it so difficult, because you literally have to ask, I want all phones, literally, I have to put them in a basket on the other side of the court or the gym or wherever I'm doing our talks, bring them over here so that they can't think about it. And you know that half of them say, I really love not being on my phone. Yeah. I said, that's your dopamine. That's your brain. Yeah. This is why we need to break those habits. You don't need a phone attached to your hand. Try and go 3 hours during the day without a phone at all and being outside. That's what my, that's what my go-to is. And you know what? They feel better.
Yeah. Right? So it's funny you say 3 hours. I was thinking get through 10 seconds because, I just recently read a study that the average attention span under 17 years old or 18 is 8.7 seconds. A goldfish is 10 seconds, right? Yeah. Because we're hit with this.
I'm a little worried.
I'm a lot worried. And indeed. I shared with you before the last time we spoke about one of the athletes I was working with and had a sit down with him and his father. And we pulled out his phone and I said, how many hours are you averaging on your phone?
Yeah.
10 and a half hours.
What?
10 and a half hours a day.
I can see 6, maybe 8, but that means, Rob, let's just say this. That means that person is not socializing. That person is not going to the bathroom. They're not showering. Like they're not eating. When are they working out? Seeing friends?
Well, if you're up for 12 or 14 hours, say on average, 12 to 14 hours,
are they going to
on the ice for an hour. Well, this is before school, right? So school hadn't just started. This was right before school started.
That is crazy.
So 10 and a half hours a day.
Oh my God.
Waking up at 10 o'clock in the morning, falling asleep, FaceTiming a friend.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're on this device all day long and, you got an hour of practice, figure, 20 minutes in the locker room to get ready maybe 10 minutes after. I see I'm in the locker room. These kids come in, they don't even have their gear off. They're reaching for their phones.
Yeah. First thing, they don't even take the neck guards off, right? They go in, grab them. And it's really nice. I'll mention the team who's doing a really great job, an association called Burlington Barracudas. They're girls hockey. You know what they're doing? When they come into the change rooms, they have the one coach I spoke to has a shoe. What's it called?
Your
shoes in
like a shoe box. Shoe tree.
So they put their phones in the shoe tree where their name is. So he can see that they're there as an attendance. He folds this little thing up. He carries it out on the ice. They cannot have it at the beginning of their practice. Soon as they're there, he wants them to focus in a different mindset. How do I prepare? Do I need to do my rolling? Do I need to do a little dry land? Let's do a warm up. Let's talk. Let's do our strategy. Let's do our game or practice talk. They have the practice. And even then, he does not allow them to go on their phone right when they get off the ice. He holds the box and at the door, he said, you did a great job.
Awesome.
Okay. So
we need more of that.
That is what associations, and I go around to associations and talk about how we can lessen phone time and how we can build that into our coaching contracts with parents. Because it is about the parents at home. Coaches can only deal with that on their time.
Right.
And this is how he chooses to conduct himself. And do you know that they won the championships?
It's awesome.
Focus.
Guaranteed. That's an absolute supporter of their performance, and when the kids that I work with, I have a one page, I call it a journal. And first thing that they do when they wake up in the morning is they have to write down what time they went to bed at, what time they woke up, and how many hours they were on their phone the day before.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the only time they're allowed to look at their phone.
Yeah.
And it's just to make this connection to, oh my God, I'm on my phone a lot.
Their feelings, right? But also their feelings.
Their feelings.
People don't understand how as soon as a parent gets a moment at a rink, I sit there and I watch. So I'm the person, I don't pull anything out. I'm like, how how fast is it going to be to the first parents take out their phone?
Yeah. Immediate.
You can't sit and think. Like, yeah. It's almost like we have created a tool that allows us to escape any of our feelings. And we're not processing things. So heir to Eve, why we are very irritable people right now.
Yeah. Well, and this is all we've had for entertainment for, well, I mean, a lot of kids have defaulted to this for entertainment for the last 18
parents
months.
Have let them do that, though.
Yeah. Right? Well, look, I'll say guilty as charged here, too. I've got two teenagers. You start to you create that. You know, yeah. You know, how do you take that? How do you take that privilege away once you've given it to them? You know, I struggled with that myself. Yeah. And now part of it was
a control app on it so I could monitor more of the time and what app, because I think I have younger kids than you, except for one.
Yeah, mine are 17 and 15.
I have an 18-year-old, but we've done the education. She passed our tests. She can now have her phone. None of the technology's in their rooms. None of them is allowed on the second floor. And it's all about their mindset. I want them to think about their bodies and think about practices, and you have to do your chores. You got to go outside in our house, do your chores, and then you're allowed to be on your phone.
Yeah.
But I've been consistent. I tell you, do you see these bags?
No, I don't. So.
Oh yeah. They're there because it's harder work now to parent, because before we didn't have to worry about this extra stress of this phone. Yeah. And if you actually remove it more, it actually parenting becomes way easier because the kids are happier.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think the fact that they can get outside and interact with each other, but I even see it, you know, with my daughter, I'll encourage her to, you know, have her friends come on over, hang out, do whatever it is, or go outside, but you'll see them. They'll all be sitting there on their phones, and I'll ask them, are you guys texting each other? Because if you're not, let's put the phones down and have a conversation. Yeah. Talk to each other. Yeah. You know,
go get a basketball. Go play darts. Yeah. Like we have a setup where we have a nice group of kids that through COVID, my son wasn't allowed to talk to girls or boys at school, right? They weren't allowed to talk.
Yeah.
And he's 14, never got to talk. I said, once your friends get vaccinated, you can all have a pool party, fire, whatever, at someone's house. So each week, a different house has set up a little hangout. Well, awesome. Now they're gravitating to my house. I'm like,
that's okay though.
I know. It's just, do you know how much food 15-year-olds eat?
Oh, well, yeah, I do know.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Boys, so, yeah.
But they're comfortable and they're talking. And this group is chatting a little bit more, and I'm not seeing the phones as much. And I don't know whether they know I'm the phone Karen of the world, but
is that a thing? Are you quoting that as a thing?
Your mom is cool. Like your mom and your family, like I said, do you guys want a fire? Let's do some marshmallows. What do you guys want? Let's, instead of asking questions that lead to social media or show me a video, let's do something. I'm always the, let's do. There are times where, we broke down during this. We had three lockdowns here, right? Three?
Yeah.
And plus my husband's a merge, right? So we had quarantines that other people didn't have. Because if he was being quarantined, so are we, which sucked. So we broke down and we had an old gaming system with one sports game. And I had a timer. So now they have a PS4. They don't even go on it.
Yeah.
They went on it a bit in the winter, but still was only an hour or so a day. And then a little bit more, but it was regulated and monitored. And I put a control app system in it. So they'd be like almost ready to come outside again. It was good.
That's good. I think more parents need to adopt that. And I love the idea that you said about the Burlington Barracudas. And I think more associations.
I've got to get that guy. I was talking to him. I got to get him on, but let's move over. We were talking about parents and how parents can be supportive during tryouts. We're running out of time and we could obviously talk. There's like, we haven't even got through it. Now, what would be your top three tips for how parents can be supportive during tryouts? Because let's face it, these are little kids, like under 14 and under. They're not even psychologically developed yet, right? Cognitively, right?
Well, not till they're 21 or 22 for boys, right?
and girls, right? It's 25, brain development.
brain development for sure. So I think it's, you know, not just for the little guys, it's for anybody all the way up. But, you know, look at tryouts are an emotional time. There's nerves, there's anxieties, there's all these emotions that are going into it. As guides through this process, we try and help, you know, what my part of my teaching is try to acknowledge the emotion, but replace the emotion with a behavior so it doesn't become an anxious emotion, right? We want it to become a part of your routine, and it's okay to be emotional, but we have to. So for my tips for the parents would be, you know, realize that emotions are high. Your kids out there, you know, they're not trying to not do well. Right. So let's acknowledge that, right?
Right. Like,
they're not out there trying to mess up on purpose. You know, they're nervous.
They're doing something you're not.
Absolutely. And they know everybody's watching them, and they know that, you know, they're being graded or judged based on, you know, a performance. So let's try and make it as comfortable for them as possible. So when the tryout is over, let's not jump on them and try and point out the things they didn't do well. Let's ask them what they liked about it. Guarantee you, you know, 9.5 out of the 10 kids are going to know what they did well and what they didn't do well. They know where their effort is, and they know when they didn't have a good effort, right? So let's not beat them down with it.
Yeah. But
no.
Do you think that we could also, as a parent, help prepare them? Like,
absolutely.
Giving them mantras at night. Like, I give our little, like, this is little guy. So he started young, like 5, and he played soccer. He's played hockey. I am fast. He just chooses simple ones. Like, I'm a cheetah. Like, this is when he was really young. And then as he aged, you can kind of see they developed into, I'm Captain America. And they kept going. And now he's like, I'm a good puck handler. Yep. I can do a good corner kick. I said, why can you do a good corner kick? Because your brother spent 5 hours a week with you in the field.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So did work help you get a good corner kick, or did you magically just end up doing it?
Yeah.
So we talk about putting in work and effort. And I mean, Wayne Gretzky never got good just walking onto the ice. I mean, the guy put in thousands of hours. So do Olympic athletes. By 18, they've put in 10,000 hours, I think.
Yep.
I think it's 10,000 I was reading.
Yeah.
And I think a few of the Olympians, I'm really lucky. We have 8 Olympians here in London.
It's amazing. Yeah.
So I have a,
I think it's so important that, you know, one of the things the parents can do, you know, on top of recognizing that our emotions are high, to support them away from the rink is going to be critical too. So helping them with a routine, like you're talking about, whether it's mantra, visualization, you know, I call it create a highlight rule, your own highlight reel, I should say, right? So we all know what we've done well. Go back in your mind and think about those things that you've done really well. Play them back in your mind for 5 or 10 minutes, you know, in the morning when you wake up, as you're having your breakfast or your pregame, you know, create a little bit of a routine. I like to use little triggers too, you know, so, you know, if you're familiar with David Goggins and his story about being the hardest man, well, he has this alter ego he calls Goggins. So I'll have my kids create an alter ego, right?
I forgot about that.
Once you step onto the ice, bring out that alter ego. You know, it's the Hulk, it's Captain America, it's somebody who has these powers and these strengths, and relate to that alter ego. And then the parents can support that when they come, you know, when they come home, and help them wind down. Don't jump on them in the car. That car ride home,
car
we've
ride
talked
home.
About this,
horrible.
Could be horrible.
Destructive,
you know,
to your relationship.
You could force kids out of the sport because they just don't want to deal with it anymore. Right. Yeah. We know what's happening.
The surveyed kids in a few of the groups that our associations were working with found out that the reason, when they asked the kids why they were leaving, very small amount was an abusive coach. A very small amount said, I can't move up because of nepotism. That was one of the reasons. And the majority, I think it was more like 60% of kids dropped out because their parents were too critical. Yet their parents, here's the kicker, Rob, never played the sport.
Oh, I know.
I did not play hockey to that level. So I'm not going to coach it. I'm not going to speak to it, but I can speak to attitude, effort. Yeah. I can do the social things and the social responsibility of what my job is as a parent at home. So that leads me to my very favorite question that we ask all of our guests. If Rob Plante could have a magic wand and fix something in sports for kids, what would be, you get three bibbidi bobbidi boos to change in sports?
Well, I think the first one, we kind of touched on this, is, you know, I think every association should have access to or use of a mental performance or sports psychologist. I think every team should get have them come in at least once a month. They should come in at the beginning of the season, sort of set a stage, create a set of goals, and create a culture.
You can do online modules.
Absolutely. Right? That's absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You can incorporate that into what the kids are doing away from the rink and help them create habits and routines. The second one would be all the coaches should be required to take some sort of mental performance, mental health program, just like they have to take their D1, their D2, and their elite level coaching. Because we need to be able to support that emotional side of the athletes today.
Which is almost 90% of what an athlete is made of is mental.
It's all mental.
Like I could find 1,000 kids, but after I have them go through tryouts and after I teach them the fundamentals, I can guarantee you that only 10 or 12 of those 1,000 will have the resilience and mental skills that it takes to work under pressure, be a good teammate, and have. And look at even corporations. They're even saying, yeah, we want you to have an IQ, but you need an EQ.
Yeah.
Right.
Look, I think you hit it right on the head when you talk about resilience and mental toughness, right? At the end of the day, look, at life is going to throw adversity at every single one of these kids at some point in their career, whether they realize it in minor league, minor hockey, junior, whatever, it's going to happen. It's guaranteed. And in my case, I wasn't prepared for it when it happened to me, because nobody had worked on those skills. I had a great support mechanism at home with my family, but I didn't have the skills to cope with the adversity. Right. I'm now at 17 years old, being away from home, you know, and in a situation where I was injured, I wasn't playing, and I couldn't get back in the lineup. I had the size, I had the skills, I could skate, I could shoot, but those things weren't going to help me out of the problem that I was in.
Right.
And I kept asking myself, what more can I do? Is it more laps, more time in the gym? Nope. I couldn't. I couldn't physically work my way out of a mental problem.
Right. And that's that's the unique thing about a sport, is that these skills are more important in how we cope, navigate through challenges and adversity, like why you're not getting playing time. Okay. You got to work your way back. You don't just shut down and quit. That's a little challenge, right? Coming back through. Look, we had Mike Brodeur on. We've had Brady Leibold on the mental game. I tell you, adversity? Yeah, that's adversity. Yeah. But these guys came out the other side with, they already had some mental skills. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Right? They had coping mechanisms and they were doing their gratitude list, and more kids today know brand names and materialistic names like Gucci, Fendi, or Vans than they do anything else. Like if you ask them what resilience or self-talk was or mantras, they don't have a clue, but they'll show you the videos on TikTok.
Yeah. Well, they don't understand how powerful their mind is to either continue to sink them or to help them get out of it. So this is where I think we need to start to introduce that mandatory. So I'll get it. Into my third point would be at a grassroots level. Let's start to create this support at a grassroots level. I know with my limited involvement with Hockey Canada, there's a large focus on the development. They call it long-term development, but it doesn't really kick in unless you're a AAA player at 14, 12, 13, 14. Yeah. Below that, you know, we're not putting programs together to support the full game, And that's including this. And if you look at where parents are spending, how much money they spend on skating, on drills, on nutrition, and then you say, hey, you know what? How much, you ask the athletes, how much of your game is mental? Well, that's a big part of the game. Well, how much of how time or money have you invested in it? Well, zero. That's pretty much the answer. You know, and now at this stage, okay, I've got the experience. You've got the experience. We know we're trying to talk to these coaches and to these athletes and tell them this is a skill. The mental skill is a skill, just like skating, shooting, and checking. And if you're not working on it and developing it, you're leaving out probably the biggest tool in your toolbox.
Yeah, always. It's always your biggest tool, right? And having that knowledge that your mind can pretty much navigate you through anything. And that we have to work through our gratitude lists, our self-talk methods, our resilience methods, also our self-evaluative leadership methods. And then we also have, so already I've listed 5 mental skills.
Yeah.
And then there's this whole other 5 components of emotional intelligence that takes years to master. So unless parents and coaches start it really young, and build that bond of security attachment in order to connect, in order to teach emotion, in order to regulate the emotion, in order to motivate, then empathy, right? And then we have the self and compassion. It takes years. And so far, if they're spending 160 hours a week on a device, that's 1800 hours a year that they're not getting any socialization now at all.
Look, I think you and I both agree, and anybody in our position agrees, there's a definite lack of development in that area on the emotional side of the game. And I think that, I dare you to find an organization that has any of those 5 or 10 skills that you just listed off that's in their development programs. None of them have it, right?
Someone just made an announcement. Who was that? Arizona? They were hiring, a mental performance coach.
Well, they have Brenly. She works with them.
Yeah, but at a different level. It was a younger level. It was really impressive. And so did someone else in Ottawa, in here. They hired an actual mental coach for their association to now work. And I think we should have been doing that for the last 15 years because we've lost so much in emotional development.
Well, you know what? It's a shame that only the elite athletes are the ones that are having access to it. And I've talked to guys that are coaching in the East Coast League. I talked to guys in the OHL. Yep. I talked to coaches in the American League, and they have to get, the first thing is, we don't have budget. Not sure if we need it. Look, those are the guys that probably need it more than the guys that are playing in the show, because they're the ones that are trying to get up there. I know, I played in the minor leagues. I could tell you what goes on down there.
It is to get up there past the OHL.
Oh my God.
And let's face it, in soccer, in basketball, in wrestling, in track, that's really hard to be able to get an NCAA scholarship as a Canadian. Yeah. And now, here's an interesting fact. Do you know that the NCAA, where they're spending their research money on? Take a guess.
Is it on mental development?
Yeah. Yes, and digital. So cell phones, gaming.
Digital deluge.
And sleep. And all the distractions.
Sleep is a huge one.
So but it's related, right? So if you're on a phone, you're up late, and it's the dopamine. So they're being actually fatigued to the point where they're not functioning, they don't have clarity, they don't have concentration. So now they're thinking, maybe we should have. So I always look to where the NCAA is investing their money. And I look to where the OHL is investing their money, right? And you look where the research is going. And that's where you see the trends moving. So we know now that unless these huge organizations take on mental skills as a serious skill, they are actually going to be very immature players and won't develop, and they'll have someone quickly replace them. I mean, now. Well, I think we'll see higher turnover.
I was thinking about it, and I didn't say it when the last time. I just made a quick note here. We part of the challenge in the conversations that I'm having with some of the athletes directly, even the coaches and the general managers, is this. we'll use your services when we need it. And to me, that's like, we live in this society of, of instant gratification. And you just touched on it. It takes years and years of practice. If we don't start implementing this foundation at a young age, you think that you can just call up a Larissa or a Rob when you have a player that needs that, and we're going to cure it in 24 hours?
A psychologist at that point. Not
well, yeah. No, it's not. That's out of my, that's outside of my playing field, right? And so there's this myth that we tell ourselves, well, we can invest in all of the skills and the drills and the conditioning and the nutrition, but the most important part of the game, we're not going to spend any money on developing, which is the mental game.
And let me,
we know that the top performers all have a mental program.
Yeah. But here's something interesting, Rob, and we spoke about this. We know that there are NHL teams that are clearly not focusing on their top line.
Oh no.
Getting this type of experience and knowledge, and you can see it breaking down their organization, right?
For sure.
And it's reaction now, right?
Yeah. And and
you're reacting, to your point, not preventing. Lewis, I think you're not giving tools. Totally, now we're giving coping mechanisms, instead of before, when they were younger, we should have been providing tools and strategies. Now we're giving them reactionary coping mechanisms, which is really not how it should work. Right.
Well, that's like saying, you know what? I got a flat tire on my car. I'll wait till all three go flat before I change them.
Exactly. So you're paying X millions of dollars for these fire wheel houses in your organization, and they're breaking down mentally and don't have that resilience and stamina. Yet your fourth line comes out there and has this experience, knowledge, confidence, resilience. And they're like, guys, you know, this is the way it's done. This is, and you can see it plain as day happen. And I was like, wow, is that a good example of what we're, because it's all workable. It's all coachable, right? Everything.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. It can all happen. Well, thank you so much, Rob, for being here today on the Parent Talk. Can you share a little bit about where you are and how to get a hold of you?
Yeah, absolutely. So my company is Mindset Body Bank. You can find me. I've got a website under the same name, mindsetbodybank.com. I use Instagram at Mindset Body Bank. I'm not very fluent on Twitter, but those are the two main platforms. And also on my LinkedIn profile under my name, Rob Polanti. I also have a business site for that as well. That's where you find me.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of your very busy hockey schedule and life with your family to do this. But I think it's really about a bunch of our, like we've said, like-minded professionals working together to make this change in sports to happen for kids at a much younger stage. And I think it's coming.
I think it's
the pendulum has swung to the other side.
I hope so. I hope so. I think more people like you and I need to be involved in this, and more parents need to recognize that they can also contribute to this. They don't just have to sit back and watch, you know, but they can participate in this and support these kind of efforts with their kids, because ultimately, look, it's just a game, right? Doesn't matter whether you get to play pro or not. At some point, you're still going to have the rest of your life to deal with. And I can tell you, there are so many athletes that the day that their career ends, they wake up the next morning and they go, I don't know what to do with myself. So even if you're part of that 0.85% that get to play pro or earn a paycheck, even for a week, you still have the rest of your life. And this is the opportunity for parents, coaches, associations to start to implement programs to build those foundation blocks to help develop kids in their sport and for life afterwards. That's my mission. I think that's our combined goal here. And I appreciate the opportunity to share that with you.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And I think it's great that we're building such a big network in this area. In Canada and in North America, I obviously, because of the pandemic, yes, we're going to have more work to do. And because of phones, we have a more of a need for this now, because if we really look at the statistics, psychotherapists, psychologists, and psychiatrists now, their waiting lists have doubled. What does that tell you?
Yeah.
Right. And family physicians, and I'm working with some of the family physicians here, and they're they are worried. They're worried that this is a bigger epidemic, that it's going to be even harder to deal with than COVID. COVID's kind of like, you get it, it's over in 7 days. Yeah. Well, yeah. Mental health could be here for life, oh, right?
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree with you more.
Crap out of me, but yeah. It really made me see. I couldn't agree
with you more.
And she goes, there's way more people affected than and in COVID because younger kids are affected and older people are affected. So she says, we actually are, we can't as a mental health or if you're looking at it as a healthcare system, we are not capable of helping this many people.
Right.
So she says, this has to come down to funding and prevention, like the programs you and I would love to offer.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. No, I think that's exactly where it needs to start.
Well, I'm excited. I feel something's happening.
I hope so. I hope so. You know, I think we got to continue this.
We'll have you on the mental game as well.
Looking forward. Thank you again. Appreciate being here.